It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Welcome back into a numbers game, hour number two on a Friday, presented by BetMGM. It is Gil Alexander, as the man said, Sirius XM channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, and Sling on down the line. Appreciate you tuning in. Vinny Maliulo still to join us. And Dave Schoenfeld is back. We talked about some of the baseball parameters for 60 games, or at least the first 60 games of a season. We did it extensively last week with Paul Sporer, I believe, as well. Just talking about what can happen in the first 60 games. What were the records? What are the baselines of what the second best playoff team average-wise would be prorated to a 60-game schedule? 33-27, by the way, is the answer to that question. 47-13, best ever. But we went through player by player. We'll get some more baseball numbers from Schoenfeld coming up later in the hour. I'll just repeat the tweet. He's not going to be on the show. But first, ladies and gentlemen, he's the greatest radio host there ever has been, for my money. He's got himself the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast these days. And, of course, the Todd Wright Toddcast, which I listened to the robustly sponsored Todd Wright Toddcast, this week's edition, which I want to get into with Todd Wright, everybody. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Gil, nice use of the word robust. I was playing with a couple of my Todd Wright Tour players last Friday, and one of my players used the word clamor twice in the first eight holes, and I stopped him. I said, okay, look, clamor is a great word, but you can only use it one more time. And he said, what is this, like three timeouts? I said, yeah, you only get it once more. So we are both wordsmiths, Gil, and I really enjoy coming on with you.
So I appreciate it, and what I'm getting from that is I got about one more robust in this segment before it becomes alarming to you.
Yes.
Okay. Just checking. I cannot recommend the Todd Wright Toddcast more highly for folks, especially this week's edition. I loved, and it was something before we get into some of these players here on out there at the Rocket Mortgage Classic that you have already called, but that you, for bettors moving forward here over the weekend, might be able to seize on who they should avoid. Before we get into that, I brought up earlier in the week, and it was this, you're right, the way you characterized it on your podcast, was sort of this story that just kind of came and went, and people who aren't real sports broadcast nerds might not have cared about, but golf done on Fox, and you had some great context to this as it relates to Joe Buck specifically, and just explain that to people, how this went down.
Well, yeah, so very quietly within the last, 7 days, I forget the actual date, basically Fox got out of the golf business. Whether they did it because if everything plays out according to plan, they suddenly would have a huge conflict hosting the United States Open men's golf tournament. There's more to the package, though. Golf is the rare sport where the PGA Tour doesn't run any of the four majors. The United States Open is run by the United States Golf Association. It's acknowledged by the PGA Tour schedule, and it counts towards FedEx Cup points and various things. But the USGA can sell that package to whomever they want. And they sold it to Fox a handful of years ago, along with the U.S. Women's Open, the U.S. Senior Open, and some other junior events. So it was awkward. It was very bad early. It got better. They tried some things, such as a lot of use of shot tracer technology, which was adopted by a bit more by CBS and NBC, Universal. So there was some good in it, but I never got used to it. I defend Joe Buck. I don't know him personally. I know a lot of people hate him. I don't. I like him, but I didn't like him on golf, much like I don't like Ernie Johnson on golf. I like Ernie Johnson sitting between Shaq, Kenny Smith, and Charles Barkley on the inside the NBA. So I never got used to golf on Fox. It was the only major men's event that was on Fox, so it was just sort of out there. But Fox threw a lot of money at the NFL 20-plus years ago, and it helped build their network. So they did the same here, but now they're out of the golf business. And where just a couple years ago, NBC Universal, which runs a golf channel, had no majors, suddenly now has two. They have the Open Championship, yeah, which we hope resumes in 2021, and they now have the United States Open.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you make the point, of course, that Joe Buck is the Fox network number one, and he was a guy who didn't want to do it himself, which is a fascinating way to get into it. And now Joe Buck is happy. And as you point out, the people who don't like Joe Buck perhaps are happy as well. It's Gil Alexander. It's Todd Wright, host of the Todd Wright Toddcast and the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast, here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 204. And I will just I'll leave it at this. I won't give the answer to this because I want people to actually go and listen to your pod. But you said that was one of three rights, three wrongs that have been righted in sports. Fox golf goes away from Fox. You have made your thoughts known on the show about Booger McFarland's performance on Monday Night Football. You said that has been corrected. And there's a third thing that you'd like corrected in sports media broadcasting. Should we give it away here, or should we just say people should go listen to the Todd Wright Toddcast and they can get the answer to that?
No, I'm happy to say it, and then I'll give my reasoning. Look, the guy's not getting any young. The guy's not getting any younger. We need Marv Albert calling the NBA Finals again. And I think one of the reasons why is if you enjoyed The Last Dance on many of those highlights, not all, because Marv got into trouble around that time, but he has come back from that since. It was Marv calling Jordan and Kerr and Paxson hitting big shots. And we need that again in the NBA Finals. And that is the other correction of major sports on TV that would fall in line with Booger no longer stumbling his way through pro football in prime time and Fox getting out of the golf business.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I would love to have Marv back in the scene. You're right. The Last Dance really did remind us of his greatness back in those days. Rebound Sanifer was all for those of us who followed Big East basketball on the East Coast. Rebound Sanifer of Syracuse was always his big one of the catch lines we loved. Obviously, he had ones that were much more prominent at the NBA level. All right, Todd, you don't pull any punches with that sort of stuff. I love that about you. Golf, you send me an extensive email on Wednesday. I so appreciate you doing this because, you know, what's interesting is that sometimes I won't get it before the tournament starts and we land on the same couple golfers or at least a couple overlap. And I always feel good about that when that happens because I know you know your stuff. You called in this email that Stallings would be a factor here. He was the first round co-leader. We'll see how he does today. Obviously, Matthew Wolf doing his thing right now. Tremendous round thus far from Matthew Wolf. He's atop the leaderboard along with Seamus. Seamus is up there as well. So we have co-leaders. Give us your thoughts on the group of golfers that you thought and you think are tailor-made for this course, and who are some of the ones where you'd be like, yeah, actually, maybe not this week.
Well, you bring up Scott Stallings, so I don't know if you've already touched on this. One of the reasons why I played him in some DraftKings leagues for the entire tournament was this golf course, while it's only been used once before for a PGA Tour event, is very unique in that it has four par fours of 450 yards or more. Yeah, again, these guys are much better than me and most of us that play golf. So last year, Nate Lashley, who out of nowhere won the tournament, was added to the tournament on Wednesday and went on to win it in unpredictable fashion to the majority. Lashley scored very well on those four monster par fours. So that stood out about Scott Stallings, that he plays 450-yard plus par fours very well. He's got the game to do it, and he popped yesterday. So that's one of the reasons why I landed on him. The other, Doc Redman was a guy I landed on as well. And some of the analysis that I had gotten on Redman, his game suited this particular golf course with a number of other analytics. Doc Redman was a guy that popped as well. Victor Hovland is a very consistent player. He's been automatic in top 25s, I think, his last five events and all since the restart. He is playing well today, minus four through 15. I see it. It basically has him just outside the top 10. He'll be in a nice position going into the weekend if he can have a good moving day on Saturday to put himself into contention. And that's not a surprise. And then Bryson DeChambeau, who is more under par than anyone since the restart with his new shape. Here's what I like about Bryson. Bryson on a Sunday, when he makes a putt that he knows can't win him the tournament late, he pumps his fist. Now, I don't know if this is all about money or just all about he's excited to score. And I like seeing that, and it just moves him up, and it shows how competitive he is. Even when he knows he can't win the tournament, he's still fighting for every birdie he can get out there. And Bryson is extremely motivated, and obviously was the choice of the experts this week going in, and he's not disappointing through a day and a half.
He sure is not. Again, average 345 on drives the back nine yesterday, including a 376 and a 377 on 14 and 17. Can we flash up Danny? I'm going to ask Danny in back in the studio before I get into some of the golfers that Todd doesn't necessarily love here this weekend. Let's flash up those live DraftKings odds if we could once again at VSiN.com and the VSiN app, just on the leaderboard. So Seamus Power and Matthew Wolf right now at 11 under. They are co-leaders, two shots above the field. So Seamus Power, these are the adjusted odds in real time, Todd. Seamus Power has been adjusted to 28-1. This is to win the tournament now. Matthew Wolf all the way down to 8-1. There's a host of golfers at 9 under, two shots back. JJ Spaun currently at 40-1. Kevin Kisner 14-1. Mark Hubbard at 25-1. And it goes on. Brian Stewart, who's 3 shots back, 40-1. Matt Wallace 60-1. Hudson Swafford also at 8 under, 40-1. DeChambeau all the way down to plus 300, meaning 3-1. That's not bettable, I don't think. Brandon Hagee, 66-1. Let's do one more screen because I'm curious if any of these stick out to Todd. But so here's Henrik Norlander. These are all at 7 under now, 50-1.
Did you see Hovland? Do we have?
Yeah, here's Hovland. Here's Hovland. Hovland is next. He's 14-1 now. 14-1. It's not that exciting, but 14-1. And then there's Donald at 150-1 and Stroud, who are 151, who are still huge long shots, with Straka at 80-1. Would you, for guys who have not made pre-flop bets, maybe even for people who have made pre-flop bets, if they were just landing now and they wanted to make a bet to win this tournament, of the ones I mentioned, is Hovland probably the best value to you?
Yeah, I think he is. I get what you're saying about 14-1. Here's the danger about doing it within the round, especially on a Friday as opposed to a Saturday or Sunday. Let me see. Doc Redman hasn't hit a ball yet. Let's see. A couple of guys in minus six haven't. Scott Stallings hasn't hit a ball yet. Ricky Fowler hasn't hit a ball yet. Adam Hadwin hasn't hit a ball yet. So you have to factor that in. That, wow, look at this guy and look at how well he's scoring. Well, the scores are out there. The scores are out there, and they have been since the restart. Maybe the PGA Tour purposely said to these tournaments, set up the golf course for scoring. We want a lot of low numbers. We want excitement. Let's go. And I agree with that. So you got to be careful here. But yeah, Hovland is a guy, and I said this pre-flop. I love that term. That could win the golf tournament. And 14-1, Victor Hovland's probably going to finish today. I see him at 7 under. Do you at 7 under with 3 holes to go? So he's either going to finish minus 8, minus 7, or minus 6. So probably going into the weekend, he'll be 5 or 6 back. All right, then there's moving day. So if he can get to within 2 or 3 back going into Sunday, he is a factor. I don't know that the value is there right now. But yeah, of the guys you listed, other than Bryson at 3-1, if you want to stay off that, and Matthew Wolf at 8-1 is even lower than Hovland, it'll probably shoot more like a 68 tomorrow or 69 and back up a little bit. Talented young player. We saw at one of the match play events in April. Back in April. Yeah, Hovland's the one that stands out. But beware that a lot of good players haven't even hit a ball yet, and one of them's going to go out and shoot 66 or 67 today and fly by Hovland.
Yeah, it's a great point. Todd Wright is our guest, of course. Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast and the Todd Wright Toddcast, who does nothing if not play golf all the time. It organizes golf tournaments down there in Central Florida. Who knows? Maybe one day in Las Vegas, Todd. Who knows? And to your point, Webb Simpson hasn't teed off yet, right? Tyrrell Hatton. So then the list goes on and on. Who is Webb Simpson? I'm curious. Who's the guy or guys? Golfers out there right now that have been sort of bandied about, conventional wisdom likes them from week to week, but might not be suited the rest of the weekend to this course.
I forget what I gave you. I'm sorry. Can I fall on the sword here? You have it in the email. I forgot what I wrote you. Some of it was wrong. Some of it was right. Who are we talking about?
No, that's all right. That's very honest. I think if I'm not mistaken, that you said with guys like with Webb Simpson, you're like, listen, I could never argue with someone who wanted to take him, but this might not be his greatest course. Was that what you were saying?
Right. Well, there were some that were looking at the numbers of this. I think they were trying too hard to make a comparison and say, okay, this course is like Colonial. There were a number of people that bought into that, that after 1 year of this tournament on this golf course, they said, oh, it's a clone of Colonial. Now, I told you, 2 weeks ago when we went into we went to Heritage, I said a guy like JT Poston stood out to me. And I wouldn't know him. I wouldn't know him if he showed up and said he was my playing partner on the first tee later today. But the numbers said three tournaments are similar in their layouts. And that's the Wyndham Championship, the Charles Schwab Challenge at Fort Worth, which changes names every year, and the RBC Heritage at Hilton Head. And I said, if nothing else, Poston looks like a top 10 play. And I believe he tied for sixth or eighth that particular week. I don't buy a lot of the comparisons. I think people were trying too hard comparing the golf course for the Rocket Mortgage Classic to Colonial. And an example of that was that Webb Simpson, who excels at Wyndham Championship and at the Heritage, he had a bad driving day at Colonial. Now, he hasn't had an awful first round. He didn't pop. But that was one of the examples. I said, okay, I'm not buying this because Webb didn't drive the ball well at Colonial for whatever reason. But I know so I can't compare the courses yet. So I get what people were trying to do. I just didn't invest a lot in it, Gil, that the comparison was there yet for a tournament that has only hosted one PGA Tour event. And I wanted to see how this one played out before I put it in the category of Wyndham, Heritage, and Fort Worth.
Yeah, by the way, it was Webb Simpson, because you were talking about the drives, his driving accuracy, I believe it was. And the other one, and you're dead on about this one, Erik van Rooyen, who appears he's not going to make the cut even through 15 here in his second round with Erik van Rooyen, who you made a very interesting point. I think this is sort of a golf handicapping thing. This sort of relates to what you were saying before these tournaments came back post-pandemic, your Todd Wright theory that I refer to, which is, the Todd Wright theory is that some of these lesser names may bubble up with no galleries, less pressure without the crowds. With Van Rooyen, interesting little quirk where you're like, he actually plays better when there's competition. And this is not like the last 2 weeks when it comes to competition.
Yeah, it's less to me about fans and more about the field. This is the worst field since the restart, and I gave you a lot of reasons. And one I left out was some guys just wanted to spend 4th of July weekend at home with their families. They can go to Columbus next week and they can play two tournaments without moving for 2 weeks, which is very rare on the PGA Tour. They're going to Muirfield. So this week, a lot of guys sat out. You know, maybe they played the last 3 weeks, or maybe they just wanted to spend time with their families, or they didn't like the golf course, or they're going to Columbus for the next 2 weeks. They're like, that's one trip. Van Rooyen, Xander Schauffele, and Mark Leishman are guys that tend to thrive when there's a lot of top-ranked golfers in the field. They are amped up by who else is in the clubhouse, who else is on the golf course. And this didn't stand out this week for Van Rooyen, who actually went into this event as I think the 11th or 12th highest ranked player in official world golf ranking in a weak field. And it just happened to work out. But against better fields, Van Rooyen pops. Xander tends to do well, which is why he does well at, say, World Golf Championship events and majors. And Mark Leishman has always had that reputation as well.
I love those little golf, little handicapping tips right there. Todd, two exit questions as I turn this into the McLaughlin group all of a sudden for how he used to say it. So moving forward then, if folks are like, all right, well, who are the two or three golfers he thinks has the best shot of winning this tournament, given the leaderboard right now? Obviously, Wolf and Power are atop that right now. But Hovland is on the short list, and who would be like two more golfers that you think if you had to choose right now, these are the three guys that are going to compete for this?
Bryson, Hovland, and Doc Redman.
And Doc Redman. Okay. And then the final question, moving beyond this tournament into the next group of tournaments here before we get to any majors, who are the two or three golfers that are the most course proof of all the tour right now?
Berger, hottest player in the world. What's his streak? 32 rounds a par or better. You and I are on that. Yeah, he chases Tiger, believe it or not. It's Berger. It's Webb. He does well here, throw it out. It's Bryson. I think it's those three. Even though DJ has had a good last week and a half, let's see what DJ does for an encore in Columbus. But yeah, I say it's those three right now. They're playing the best golf. They're course proof as we head to Columbus.
We got Berger and we got Bryson, but your audio might have cut out for some in between. Who was the one in between?
Oh, Berger, Bryson, and who else? Shoot, who else did I just say? Webb Simpson.
There you go. Okay. Todd, as thorough as always, I always enjoy it. And by the way, love the podcast, man. Robustly sponsored as it is, Todd Wright from the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast and the Todd Wright Toddcast. Appreciate it as always, sir.
Thank you for making people clamor for the Todd Wright Toddcast.
You're very welcome. The lavish Todd Wright, everybody, right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And there it is, Matthew Wolf. Oklahoma State Cowboy, 12 under for the tournament. I believe it's 9 under for the round through 15. My goodness, one-stroke lead over Seamus Power. We'll come back, Vinny Malilo, and some baseball parameters for bettors from Dave Schoenfield. Coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Back on A Numbers Game right here, as the man said. Gil Alexander live from San Francisco. Danny Burke back in the studio in Vegas. You okay, Danny? You good?
I'm doing right. Good, Gil.
All right.
Even though you don't buy it.
No, I do. We were having a conversation off air that we shouldn't repeat here. So everything's good. Dave Schoenfeld, who we quoted last week, the week before, I can't remember anymore. These days blur. It's the strangest time in our lives. But we were talking about, because the Major League Baseball season, of course, will be 60 games over 66 days, this very truncated sprint in baseball, which we're all looking forward to handicapping. Let's hope it happens. And we were given Schoenfeld and there was a couple other writers at ESPN.com. We were conveying some of the parameters like, okay, well, here's what's possible. So based on player props, based on some of the props, betting props that have been available, know that, let's take one, for example, the greatest 60 game stretch to ever start a season was 47-13, the 2016 Mariners and one iteration of early 20th century Yankees. So when there's a 41.5 out there, I mean, you have to go under. Like, it's just not that easy to do. Just to give you a sense, give you some context. We talked about Ubaldo Jimenez, like the lowest ERA in the first 60 games of the season, I think was 0.93, that kind of thing. And again, these are the first 60 games. You could probably do this exercise and maybe should do this exercise by picking any 60 game stretch to get a better idea. But these are in terms of the first 60 games. So Schoenfeld put together some more of these. I believe it was yesterday or maybe this morning. Let's throw up some of those, Danny, because these are interesting. And again, these are just designed, not just a trip down memory lane of stats, but just a design to sort of relate these to some of your props. And here's, he had two pages of these. I think he had a pitcher's one and then he had a hitter's one. Here are the pitching totals through 60 games. This is over the last decade. He confined this to the last decade. Wins, Ubaldo. That was the same year he had that 0.93 ERA. So these are the first 60 games. This Jimenez was with the Rockies. You may recall that first half season. 0.93 ERA, 11 wins. All right, those are the outliers. So just think about those as extreme. Any prop that gets close to that, like the wins specifically, how high have you seen in wins props? You see 8.5s out there, Danny?
Yeah, I think it's right around that number, 8.5.
Yeah, that's gonna be really hard to get to.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to do under nothing. Scherzer had 133 strikeouts through 60 games in 2018. I don't remember that. Kershaw 0.65 WHIP. And then Keuchel 2017, Strasburg 2016, Patrick Corbin 2013, 9-0 in terms of win percentage. Somebody's going to put up a win loss record of something and 0, you know, in the first 60 games. That will happen. And then the saves, Yates 2019, Grilly, I forgot about that, 2013. Saves is going to be fascinating. I mean, Danny, this is the thing. How are pitchers going to be handled? There's already some word now that teams like the Dodgers and other teams, they're like, first go round on this stuff, none of our guys are pitching more than three innings. So saves are going to be, I mean, saves is a different category. I'm just saying in terms of wins, wins are going to be a funny thing to track. You got to go under. The instinct on wins has got to be under because it's just going to be random. Saves is a different story because they're going to have their guys, and some teams are going to be more aggressive than others, I would imagine.
100%. I agree with you. I think pitching is really hard to judge as at this point because of how it's condensed. And really, for a lot of these teams, every game is pretty much going to be a playoff atmosphere-esque type of game. So you don't really know what the rotations are going to be, the type of strategies these coaches are going to try to implement, these managers, rather, are going to try to implement. So it's uncharted territory, as we keep saying, but it is for the players and coaches, too. So who knows how they're going to implement these strategies. So personally, like you said, the only thing I would probably play would be the under wins if it's at that 8.5 number. Everything else I'm a little hesitant on. But the next page we get to, I'm actually curious your thoughts because I like one of those.
All right, let's see these. These are the hitting ones. Again, these are just sort of the outliers. These are the extremes. This is from Dave Schoenfeld. Again, he did a great job putting this together from 2010 to 2019. These are the hit marks. First 60 games, the best, if you will, over the last decade, first 60 games. We could flash those up at VSiN.com and the VSiN app. Well, maybe we're not. Maybe I'll have to go to my phone. There they are. Christian Yelich, 2019, he had 22 homers. So did Josh Hamilton back in 2012. And I mentioned there were five guys who have hit 20 homers first 60 games over the last 4 years, Yelich among them. Cabrera with 67 ribbies in 2013. There you see the run stolen bases, 34. You're going under on stolen bases, aren't you, Danny? I can already tell.
No, what I actually liked is Christian Yelich. I think he's 25-1 to have the most home runs because think about it. You're playing your division 40 games, and he dominates against NL Central opponents. Me, being a Cubs fan, know this specifically, and a guy who can heat up more so than any other, Christian Yelich is that guy. So I actually like him at 25-1.
Batting average, you see Bellinger, 376, the only guy to hit 400 first 60 games of the last 20 years, Chipper Jones back in 2008. So keep that in mind when you see props for 400. Just some parameters for you. Vinny Maliulo next. I don't know if he's in studio. I don't know if he's on the phone. I forgot to tell him I was leaving town. We'll see. Oh, there he is. Next on a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Day email, I was alluding to this earlier, with best bets from guests and hosts mentioned during all of our shows. We also have increased the amounts of stats and analysis we post to VSiN.com. Sign up for a risk-free subscription now. No risk, devoid of risk. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. It's free until August. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you like slow jams as much as I do, but if you've got your DeBarge requests, I don't know, maybe Switch. I don't know. Maybe a little Isley Brothers. That's Vinny right. Maliulo is here with the dulcet tones. Vinny, how you doing, man? Good morning.
What do you say, buddy? I'm in the chair. I'm in Gil's chair in honor of you, buddy, my friend. and I'm just hoping to contribute because I cannot even hope to challenge the great job that you do in this chair, buddy.
Nah, man, you look great in there. You should hang out. I like those blinking lights behind you as well. There's so much I want to talk to you about. First of all, we got two little segments here. After the break, I want to talk to you about the whole past posting thing that Crack and I talked about yesterday, that I talked about the day before, because I find it to be this interesting issue in gambling that we may run into from time to time in faraway places. But now that a legal jurisdiction will have to rule on it, I want to get your thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. But Danny and I were just talking about, you know, what is possible. What are the extremes in a 60-game start of a baseball season? Just to kind of give folks context, for prop bets. What prop bets have you put up there, Vinny?
Well, you got to love Chris Andrews and the job he does. So and just kind of retrace a little bit, right, Gil? Once the shutdown occurred and we realized that the season was not going to be fulfilled in its entirety, the regular season wins were refunded. Now, if anyone had wagers on the futures, whatever prices that you had on the futures, those prices stood, right? So, the divisions still stand, and they've been reposted. The pennants still stand, whatever you had there, along with the World Series, whatever you had, but they've been reposted. We did repost regular season wins predicated on a 60-game season. In this one, we put must play a minimum of 59 regular season games for 2020 for those to be active. So those are available here at the Sal Point. Of course, the app for the folks that have an app that whether they're Nevada residents or visitors to Nevada, once they're in-state, they can activate the wagering on them. And then put up a few other props. Predicated on a minimum of 59 games played, too. Most wins by any pitcher during this season, over under 7.5, the over favored at $1.30. Will any player hit 400 or better in the regular season? Minimum of 186 plate appearances. Yes,
that's
or no.
What I was going to ask.
Yes,
Vinny. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
that's
okay.
Exactly what I wanted to know about the 400 one, because that was sort of the elephant in the room. Like, mm-hmm. if someone had 80 at bats and hit 502, was right. that going to qualify? But there's my answer. 186. How'd you come to that number?
Well, again, you know, it's a matter of math. You predicated, Gil, on you saying 60 games. Obviously, you know, you're focusing on regular batters, and you know, you probably about 3.5. At bats per game, so you figure it out that way. That's the easiest way to do it. But again, to your point, you look, there are house rules, but these are stipulations per proposition wager. So here's two of them for that one bet. When you think about it, right, Gil? So one must be 59 games minimum, and then in the case of hitting 400, then a minimum of 186 plate appearances. Most wins and losses by any one team, any single team or more teams, 41.5 over would be pick 'em minus a dime to the over or under. Or if you think a team is going to lose more than 41 games, then over 41.5 is actually favored at $1.20. So, just,
are you getting? I'm going to be curious to see. Let's take the wins at 41.5. I'd be very curious to see what the percentages of money you got on the over and under, or the percentages of tickets that you get on the over under, because I would think mm-hmm. that you're dealing with a more sophisticated baseball betting pool during a pandemic. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But I would think the people betting will be more specific. And I would think that group would lean under on that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Probably good guesses.
Yeah, no, that's a fair statement. I mean, in general public, when it comes to the regular season wins, they love to bet the overs. When we refunded, there were more over bets, certainly, on the first set of regular season wins when we thought that the season was going to be completed. And fans, you know, a lot of those are fans and they're rooting for their team or a group of teams. So the general public, the more casual fans, will bet overs and they root for it. It's just like betting overs in totals, right, in games. Listen, nobody likes it necessarily. More folks like to root for points and offense. Same thing here, Gil, and you'll find more seasoned bettors. Pros would look to see if they can get some value on some unders here, and so your assessment is spot on.
Let me ask you this one. This is a self-centered. No, it's self-centered, but it has to.
Who do you have, Gil? Come on, tell me. What do you got?
No. I think I already know the answer to this. I had past tense AL MVP and NL MVP bets mm-hmm. on Shohei Ohtani and Ronald Acuna Jr. when I thought, like everybody, that was going to be 162 games. This is way back when.
Yeah.
Way back when in the dark ages. Should I be upset that those were refunded?
I don't think so, Gil. I mean, listen, you didn't bet him here, I don't think.
No, sir.
Yeah.
No, sir.
So, and again,
somewhere far away from the South.
No, the reason I bring that up is because,
yes.
You know, what was the stipulation when you bet him? Was there a minimum number of games or you know, whatever the case may be? But it's clearly that was predicated, particularly the Cy Young, right? I think the Cy Young was certainly predicated on a full season, right? You've got so many more pitchers now, you're probably going to be better off with the Cy Young Award, given the fact that if the Cy Young Award were going to go to a reliever or a non-starter, I should say, during a season, this would probably be that season, wouldn't you think?
Yes, right? Absolutely.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think you might have got a break there.
So maybe so.
Yeah.
These were not Cy Young, just to clarify. These were MVPs. Vinny, let's take a break. Let's have this discussion because I'm really curious to hear your reaction to the notion of pass posting and what went down this past weekend and how you think it should be and how it will be adjudicated. Coming back on a Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It is July. Don't forget, July marking the return of major sports, of course. Everybody looking forward to wagering at BetMGM Sports, the premier sports betting app from the same folks who bring you the world's greatest casino resorts. Get the action started with a risk-free first bet up to $500 when you sign up and use promo code VSIN500. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, in-game betting, boosted odds specials, daily promotions. It's all there. Just download the BetMGM app today. Use promo code VSIN500. Make your first bet risk-free up to $500. Time to believe in your game. Visit BetMGM for the terms and conditions. Got to be 21 or older, physically located in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, or West Virginia. And as always, please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. It's Gil Alexander live in San Francisco. Let's update the golf one last time before we get out of here. Matthew Wolf atop the leaderboard at the Rocket Mortgage Challenge in Detroit. 12 under for the tournament. 9 under through 16 today. One stroke lead over the Irishman Seamus Power, who's through 17. He's 11 under, by the way. It's an Irish accent right there. Kevin Kisner and Bryson DeChambeau. Go away, Bryson DeChambeau. He's 2 back for those of us who might be fading him head to head for the full tournament. Look at DeChambeau. He's 2 back, lurking, hovering. Vinny Maliulo, ladies and gentlemen, back with us here on A Numbers Game at VSiN. Oh, by the way, Vinny, before I get into this,
yes.
Congratulations to Scott Van Pelt, who yesterday had his last show in Connecticut. I believe he said after 25 years in Connecticut, he's headed back to what the kids call the DMV these days. We didn't call it that growing up, but he's headed back to his home area there in the D.C. area to do SportsCenter shows with Stanford Steve from here on out. So congratulations to him. And little birdie told me that Trouble Funk is doing his music, and that's a huge thing for go-go fans in D.C. But that's a whole nother story.
That's great. He's a Terp, isn't he? He's a Maryland grad.
He's a Terp.
Yeah.
He's a Terp. I'm good friends with one of his old roommates. As
good for him. He does a good job. It's a good show.
Vinny. Yes. Okay. So so this past weekend, you're familiar with the story.
Yeah.
Doug Kazarian did a great piece on it at ESPN.com. There was an incident. I don't know if an incident is kind of exaggerating it with that word, but there was a situation where someone went into the Bellagio late at night on the kiosks there. Mm-hmm. And after some Korean baseball games, and I think a Chinese baseball game had started, because MGM had not plugged in manually correctly into their app there, I guess, or into the kiosk or into their whole system, he was able to make what we call a past post bet.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, there was no guarantee he was going to win and he and his buddies or whoever else was betting these, no guarantee they were going to win, but the odds were heavily swung in their favor. Let's put it this way, since the game was already partially was already in play, and it was they already knew the score, they already knew how far into the game it was. Anyway, among the winnings, a $137,000 multi-leg parlay. So I'm just curious, because I've bantied this around with folks because I think it's an interesting gambling question. Mm-hmm. Gamblers have some thoughts. Some more seasoned gamblers, I think, almost go to the book side on this. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this? And, oh, by the way, what's your experience dealing with past posters in your illustrious career?
You mean cheaters? Past posting.
I think you're correct, by the way. I agree with you.
I guess I could start with some experience. It probably takes place more so, or it used to anyway, on table games. There's so many more table games and decisions during the course of an hour and things like that. You get people to try to pass post on games and look for dealers and floor personnel that are not paying attention or are easily distracted. There's the great line in the movie Casino where Robert De Niro's character talks about lions circling the herd of antelope, looking for the weak and pouncing. I always took that personal if somebody tried to cheat, and I took a lot of pride in catching them. And they incurred many times what I referred to as the wrath of the rattan, which was the smack on the hand first with the stick. The stick used by the dice stick man, made of rattan. Oh, it's excellent. Better than bamboo, actually. So the thing about it, Gil, in this particular case, and the reason I say that it's cheating is really pretty evident. And it's interesting, and I have heard many of your guests this week, seasoned bettors, professionals, who really feel the same way. And the reason for that is this, Gil. And this is going to, there's certainly an old school element to this, which I have no problem bearing out. There's a code of honor between bettor and bookmaker. Now, I think that's getting lost in this expansion, frankly, around the country. But some folks still abide by it on both sides of the counter. And I would encourage those getting into the business to take this bit of advice. I'm certainly not pontificating here, but it's a good lesson for those who care to listen, because I get asked a lot, hey, I want to get into the business. What's the best way to do it? And there are other aspects to take into consideration. This is one of them. As a bookmaker, you never want to see anybody go bust. You never want to see a bettor get wind up just totally busted. That's not good. That's not good bit for business. It's just not good.
Doesn't help anybody.
It's not good for anybody. It doesn't help anybody.
Yeah.
And I learned that at a very young age, even, at the racetrack. The code I'm referring to is there should be a respect between bettor and bookmaker, whether the bettor is a professional bettor or a casual bettor, because they're putting their money up. And I think that's what people look for. And you say, Vinny, that sounds really great, and that's kind of hokey, it's pie in the sky. No, it's the real world. Mutual respect is good for business. Always remember that for the people getting involved out there. And just to reinforce for those of us that are in the business. That code is one of you as a bettor are entitled to and should look for the best prices, the best opportunities. I have no problem if you are as a bettor, Gil, or if you can find football games and lay less than three and take better than three, by all means, you should do that. And you're entitled to that, and you should be rewarded for that. If you win, you middle game, whatever, you should be paid. You win bets, you should be paid. If you're not successful, we'll take that money and we'll use it to pay winning bets. So with that framework, full disclosure, in this case, a mistake was made internally. Well, if you go to the bank later today and you make a $1,000 deposit and you get your receipt and there's an extra zero there for your account, what are you going to do? The bank is certainly going to at some point realize that mistake, and they're going to make the adjustment accordingly. It could be the other way. You want to put $1,000 in your account. You leave the bank. You don't check your receipt. You get home, and you look and say, there's only $100 here. Well, your recourse is to go back, review the tapes, review the videos, run down the drawer, and things like that. So it's a very similar situation. In this particular case, people took advantage of a mistake. Pass posting is not only frowned upon by the properties, but the Gaming Control Board as well. The MGM is a big favorite to have a ruling in their favor here. It's no different than if the ball drops on a roulette table right now as I walk out of here, and then all of a sudden it falls on number 17. There's nothing on 17 before the ball gets spun, but all of a sudden, lo and behold, now there's a black check, a $100 check on 17. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Player's not going to get paid.
By the way, Vinny, I agree with you. I've tried to make the point earlier in the week mm-hmm. that for some reason people seem to think, and some people feel wronged by certain operators. I get it. So
understand.
They have an axe to grind. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, there seems to be this strange thing where people think if a operator mm-hmm. makes a mistake, it's their God-given right that it's
sure.
all of a sudden the world mm-hmm. tips in favor. You know, that's too bad. The scales tip in their favor. It's just not how the world works. Do you agree with me that the sheer size of the money won might actually be a factor in this? That had it been $2,000 or $3,000,
mm-hmm.
right, the operator would have just said, all right, you either take the money and we never see you again, or you refund this and we can continue betting here. But it's the sheer amount that has made this so grotesque.
Yeah, the amount is, you know, six figures is certainly gotten a lot more attention, and it's going to result in more scrutiny probably, right? But I think, Gil, whatever the mistake is here, in this particular example, okay, you've got a situation where not only one person, but anybody that took advantage of this, they're going to look to do it again. So you could say, you know, again, I'll refer to the movie Casino. You can either take the money or you can take the hammer, right? take the money and get the hammer or just leave, right? Look, the bottom line is this. If you tried it once, my experience is this. You tried it once, you're going to try it again, or you're going to encourage somebody else to do it because, oh, wait, you're going to get a free pass there. No, there's no free passes. The other side of it, full disclosure, right, is if the error had gone in favor of the book here, would they have refunded the money? Personally, yeah. If I undercovered a mistake, you got a ticket, and you can demonstrate to me that there was that mistake, then you're entitled to, you know, to get your money, right? I guess the greatest example of that is it's not mandatory, Gil, if somebody loses a ticket that they get their money back. But we do have a courtesy procedure in place that if we can find that ticket, whether you misplaced it, you destroyed it, it got stolen, or whatever the case may be, we'll do our best after 60 days, review it, and make sure that you do get paid.
Code of honor, Vinny.
That's
between
right.
Bookmaker and bookie. Some people listening are going to just shrug their shoulders and think this is hokey, as you said, or corny, I believe is the word you used. But
those that know,
the
know.
The world or the industry, yeah, those that know, know. The industry is a better place with that code of honor. Thank you, Vinny. Appreciate it as always. Thank you to everybody on the show. Good luck with all your bets this weekend. From VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.